You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.
Today, Radiant Creators is talking to Marius Landman. Marius is an algorithm data analyst, trend forecaster, and Radiant Creator who is rapidly emerging as a well-known and respected voice for cryptocurrencies. Marius believes in and lives by the power of dreaming big, and shares with us examples of overcoming impossible odds throughout his life to achieve the success and freedom he enjoys in his life today. A recent quote Marius shared on social media is an example of his life-affirming ideas we discussed during this interview. "You predict your own future, and what you speak out will transform your reality," says Marius. We begin the interview exploring how Marius combined his extensive engineering background with his positive outlook on life to emerge as a knowledgeable and enthusiastic voice for crypto. We move on to how to free your mind from the daily grind and the creative force you will gain from doing so. We finish up talking about creating the life you desire through the very real power of dreaming big. And on whatever platform you're listening, please like and add a couple positive words and share. It helps us out a tremendous amount. Enjoy the show. Glad to have you on the show today. Got Marius Landman, and you are a very, I would say, unique person in crypto. Got a great site, MariusLandman.com. You're kind of an enigma. You know, no one exactly knows who you are. Are you deliberately mysterious? You don't really have a bio on your site.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you so much for the interview. And thank you for being a member as well. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I didn't really know that I'm enigma. I thought I'm open and transparent there. But yes, I don't really have a bio on the website. I am Marius Landman, and a lot of people associate me with the different names, and there's a lot of FUD going on, you know. People are creating accounts and saying my name is, I saw yesterday, there was another name, they call me Peter Anderson. But to be honest, I'm one name, Marius Landman. My bio is basically on LinkedIn, so I keep that separate, and there isn't a link that you can actually go to LinkedIn and see myself on LinkedIn. But you started with so many questions there.
Sorry. didn't mean to overwhelm you there. Yeah. Okay. So I like that. So on your site, there's no bio that goes into all the history of who you are and such, but it does exist. It's just not linked to, and that's fine. Let's start for fun with an icebreaker question just to get things rolling, and then we'll get back to, you know, we'll look into how you came to your unique style of technical analysis and your unique way of seeing the market, the crypto market, and your unique way of seeing life. It's very positive. So I like all these things. So here's an icebreaker question. Are cryptocurrencies a peaceful revolution?
I would say it's a peaceful revolution in the sense that, I just have to get my words correct here.
Take your time. Interesting
question. There's definitely a peaceful revolution, but at some point, I don't believe it's going to be peaceful all the time. You know, it's we go through spurts where the human population goes through anger stages, where they really want to get rid of the fiat currencies, and then they get into a position where they feel they're getting nowhere. And they then get depressed. And then you go through a constant cycle, you know, where we are on the high and it looks like we're going to overtake the world and Bitcoin and cryptos, that is the future of the world. And then the price drops and everything comes to a standstill and you get trading analysts that say that Bitcoin will go to zero and people lose faith. And then in essence, the peaceful revolution, as you can say, gets dismantled. So there's no constant effect to either peaceful or forced protocols. You know, I think we constantly, the human cycle, go through ups and downs the whole time. And I see this in Bitcoin. I see this in anger stages, in depressed stages, in euphoria stages. Right now, people are getting starting to get excited, and they think the market is just going to go up and up and up. And then you will now see that there'll be tweets going around, oh, we're going to kill fiat. Fiat is going to be destroyed. The market is going to collapse. At the end of the day, you know, the fiat currencies and cryptocurrencies can live together, and they should live together.
Yeah.
So that's just how I see it from my own perspective at the moment.
In the movie The Matrix, when Morpheus said to Neo, "Welcome to the real world," that's what it was like. And I realized, oh my gosh, I never understood the surveillance state and the control that exists. And it's really all done through fiat currency, through banks. You need permission to buy something, permission to pay your rent, permission to have a business.
Yeah, it's unreal. You know, I think in a sense, the fiat currencies, they've put a lot of people in debt. And a lot of people misunderstand the housing market, for example. In the last few years, we saw house prices go up and up and up and up. You know, a house that's worth $200,000 suddenly becomes $400,000, and then $600,000, and then $1 million. And people misunderstand that concept completely. The reason most of these house prices go up is the banks. The banks are allowing these prices to go up, because they want to get people into more debt. My gosh, if they can get you into a $600,000 home loan debt while your income is declining and while interest rates are going slightly up, or maybe just stabilize and just stay down, you are turning into a negative household income because you've got a larger amount of debt. And this has got to do with inflation. There's a lot more, and I don't think we would have the time to explain it here, you know, why house prices went up and why the banks don't want house prices to come down. I mean, one of the reasons why house prices probably won't come down that much is because if the bank has a mortgage of $600,000 on you and your house is only $800,000, if that property comes down to $400,000, you sit with a mortgage of $600,000. You may decide to walk away, and the bank's going to sit with the debt. So that's why I say fiat currencies and cryptocurrencies may have to live together for a long time, and I think that could happen. So the banks are evil, you know, they are really are evil. And but regardless, you know, if they are evil or not evil, what we are trying to do is to get people into cryptocurrencies, help them get out of debt completely, because you should not have a credit card. I mean, you can live without that. It's more the Western world that rely on credit cards. Now, credit cards, they've got a limit of, let's say, $20,000, and most people will go and spend that entire $20,000 limit. You don't need credit cards. You need to get rid of your debt, and that's when you become free. And when you are free, you've got more time to do other things and think about plans to develop businesses. So it's right on the other spectrum, you know, where you are negative and positive. Positive is not having any debt. Negative is having debt, getting credit cards and all that kind of stuff. And even a vehicle, you know, spending $30,000 and going to debt to buy a vehicle. Why not buy a $5,000 vehicle cash? You know, don't worry about your ego, but you're out of debt.
Debt has replaced money in our culture to a great extent. We used to think of, you know, how much money do I have? Now we think about how much credit do we have? And I think most people, I don't think they really in their own lifetime see paying it off, so they're not really concerned. It's just a matter of how much debt you can have and what monthly payment can you afford. And actual ownership, or actual even real wealth, seems to be something that's very far away for most people, if it's even a concept at all.
You are definitely correct. But you know, why the human race wants to sit with a monthly payment and work out this is how much I can afford on a monthly basis is just really beyond me. Because, and you know, it creeps up like a little snail, because you look at your income and you say, for example, I'm earning $7,000 a month in my family. And then they look at, okay, a car payment is going to cost me $100 per month. This payment will cost me $200 per month. And they work that out and they say, this is what I can afford. So my income can actually pay that on a monthly basis, and they start making more debt. But little do they realize they're putting themselves into a slave scenario, because you're on a treadmill now. You must pay that fee or that debt every single month. You can't stop. It's a vicious cycle, but we in the Western world are starting to get that now. We're feeding the banks, and the time to get out of debt. I tell you, for our family to get out of debt was just one of the most amazing things. Once we got out of debt, we suddenly started seeing profit being made, and our minds started thinking about other business ideas. You have to get out of debt because you're going to free your mind as well.
What does it take to be a free human in the world today, and how does that relate to cryptos?
Well, it takes a bit of innovation, as per se. Now, innovation to get rid of debt is identifying all your debts on one side, and then on the second side, identifying how much money can you start to invest into cryptos. And then there's a lot of different aspects as well. You can't just simply go invest in cryptos. I see so many people investing in ICOs and losing their money. A lot of people invest in all sorts of cryptos. I mean, there's about 3,000 or 4,000 cryptos. 50% of those cryptos won't exist in 2 years from now. And then these people still lose their money on those kind of cryptos as well. Instead of just then deciding on your top strong cryptos, take less profit and you still get out of debt. Just this morning, I spoke to a student who actually lives in, Arizona, from memory. Morning my time now. Don't know what time it was his time. But this guy is investing $6,000, and we're going to help him to turn that $6,000 into $30,000. His only debt that he has is student debt. So if we can help him turn that $6,000 into $30,000 by the end of this year, which is not impossible, we can get him out of debt. Once he's out of debt, he's a free thinker.
Once you have that free mind and you don't have the debt, then you definitely are, well, you've kind of taken a step out of the matrix. You actually can live your own life in the way that you might desire. One of your tweets was great. A lot of them are great, but one that I really liked recently was, if Warren Buffett hates Bitcoin, then we need to buy some more. These elite are quietly buying up Bitcoin, and Warren knows there's a limited supply. It's one of the few times where we can actually watch them and just almost like use their own power against them. It's like they're not existing in secret anymore, it seems.
Yeah, exactly. You are 100% correct. I mean, gosh, you just need to go to Google and see what Warren Buffett says about Bitcoin. Now, what was his last statement? He said that Bitcoin is rat poison. I mean, come on. I mean, the second point that we need to understand, and this is no disrespect to Warren Buffett or to older people, but, Warren Buffett is an old dog, in brackets. I mean, look, this is a new revolution. I want to call it a revolution. Cryptocurrencies is the new thing. It's here to stay. And unfortunately, Warren Buffett, I would say, at his age, although he's really smart and clever, I don't think he really understands where cryptocurrencies are going to go. Or maybe he does, but he just doesn't want to agree with it. Because the old boys club, if you can imagine, where people go in, they smoke these big, thick cigars, drink red wine, and discuss how they can make more money out of people in the banking industry or financial institute. This is Warren Buffett. Behind closed doors, these guys are terribly scared of cryptocurrencies because they know that any cryptocurrency portfolio will outshine Warren Buffett's portfolios. I mean, our own model portfolio from the beginning of the year till now is up, as of this morning, 423%. Now, where's Warren Buffett's portfolios made that kind of money? So, of course, these guys get agitated. They want to stick with the old system of investing in the Dow Jones, in the stock market, in the S&P 500, and all those kind of businesses, which don't even make sense. There are new things happening now, and these new things are like the internet that started in the 80s. In 10 years from now, a child that is now 10 years old will not even know what a dollar looks like. He probably won't even handle a dollar because the new kids now pay for everything on their iPhones, on their smartphones. So it's a new era, and unfortunately for people like Warren Buffett and these people, I respect them. But I also respect them in the sense that I would say that most of these people are really wrong. And if Warren Buffett accidentally listens to this, call, Warren Buffett, you are completely wrong. You need to open your eyes and invest in cryptos. Now, the other part of this is also we have evidence in our data that Warren Buffett is already investing in cryptocurrencies on sideline projects, because we found evidence of companies, which is a name, I'm just going to say, for example, now XYZ company. We go and search who owns that company. We go and search further and further. And then, we find out, this is owned by Warren Buffett. So, and if these people keep on saying that Bitcoin is rat poison, I'm going to release this data. And then we will see who is shamed. Like, for example, a prominent senator in Texas, he and his wife, we know the 6 Bitcoin addresses that they own. Those 6 Bitcoin addresses now has a total value of $7 million. But then the senators in America want to tell people not to invest in cryptos. What is going on here? Who is lying to who? You know, I tell you now, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to make a lot of money and get out of debt. And the world banks, the banksters, I like to call them banksters, they don't want it to happen. They don't want people to get out of debt. And I tell the people now that listen to this message, you keep buying Bitcoin and cryptos, invest in the right cryptos. When you make your profit, you cash out, you take your money, don't be greedy, you're going to get out of debt. And then once you're out of debt, help the next person. If we can get 6, 7, 8 billion people in the world get out of debt, we're good to go. We don't need the banks. We really don't.
Oh, definitely, because the banks are, they really are the center of control. Well, when I think about Warren Buffett and his statements, it seems like he's part of a club that we're not in, and I guess it's not really cool to be in it anymore, because it's kind of a club that's going out of business. I wonder sometimes if he's just nervous, because if you think about it, Warren Buffett's more of a, like the heads of a lot of huge financial institutions. I mean, they're really just a letterhead for a lot of other business. Like, I don't know what Warren Buffett really thinks, but my guess is, since he is buying crypto anyhow, just through layers of abstraction, like, my guess would be he probably knows crypto is a good thing, an emerging thing, but I bet even if he wanted to, he couldn't say it.
Yeah, exactly. You are 100% correct. Okay, let's think about this now. Okay, in the beginning of the year, when Bitcoin did really well, and it dropped slightly, it came down from its high. On 10 January 2018, Warren Buffett said, cryptocurrencies will come to a bad ending. Okay? Now think about this. When a big investor like Warren Buffett, with a lot of clout, a lot of contacts, when he says something like that, that means there's something going to happen in the market. He says, cryptocurrencies will come to a bad ending. What has happened in the last 6 months? It's gone all the way down. And they were even saying that Bitcoin was going to go to zero. Now, obviously, that's not our case, you know. But they were trying to push cryptos and Bitcoin to go to zero. And Warren Buffett said that in 10 January 2018. Come May 7, when he realized they're not going to push it this far. On May 7, he said, Bitcoin is an asset that creates nothing. See, he was trying to push it a lot more lower because it didn't go fast enough. They wanted to kill Bitcoin. Their target was the 1st of June, kill Bitcoin. It didn't happen. Then on May 16, Warren Buffett came out and he said he just doesn't get Bitcoin. He doesn't get it. He himself says, I don't get Bitcoin. I don't understand what Bitcoin is. So he is making these erratic statements that when you look back in history, and you see the timelines when all these people were saying these things. Now, remember, it's not just Warren Buffett. If you look at 10, 12, 13 January, there's about 7 prominent people that say the same thing at that time in that week. Next, May 7, the same 7 prominent people said the same thing that Warren Buffett said. And come May 16, when they couldn't break Bitcoin down, these 7 people, including Jamie Dimon, said more or less the same thing. And then you look at the mainstream media, they reiterate all these things that these 7 puppets are saying. They really try to break Bitcoin down and get people out of cryptos. Because when they get people out of cryptos, who's going to buy up all these Bitcoins? It will be the banks and the banksters. Because once they control Bitcoin, they're going to control the world. They can control every single cryptocurrency. Unfortunately, their plans are not working. And I think the majority of people in the cryptocurrency industry does not see this or understand this fighting going on. Now, in one of my latest reports, I said that the elite, and I call them the banksters, the elite, they are going to lose control. And I gave a specific date when they started to lose the control. They cannot stop Bitcoin anymore. About a week ago, Bitcoin started turning around and is going to go upwards. And you will see that this year, we're going to reach 60,000 and more in Bitcoin. And next year more. We've basically got 4 years to make big, good money out of this. And the banksters will not be able to control Bitcoin because we, the people, are too strong. You know, there's a thing about...
Oh, yeah, we're still here. Sorry, you clicked out for one sec, but we're signal looks good now, so...
Sorry, I'm just ranting on.
Let you
talk more.
Oh no, actually, you know, here on the show, our favorite part is when people rant and go off and have tangents because, you know, we're interviewing you.
No, I've just got a completely different viewpoint about Bitcoin. You know, unfortunately, it's completely different, and one of the reasons is because, and let me just get into this quickly. When I started with Bitcoin, I started investing first. Now, my first Bitcoin that I bought was in 2014, and I just can't remember the price that I bought it. This is now Australian dollars. It was way under $100 anyway at that time, but I can't remember the exact price. But anyway, I bought it. It doubled in price, and I thought, yes, this is unbelievable, and I sold it. Now, this worked through the Australian Securities and Exchange Commission at that time. Because it was a company that was involved in Bitcoin, and you could buy the company shares, but the company shares were almost the same price as Bitcoin. So I bought the shares in the company on the ASX, went up, and I sold. And I thought, yeah, I was smart. And just to see later on, yeah, I can't remember when it went to 1,000 last year, 17, somewhere, you know. But it went up 400, 500, then went up and down, and then it went eventually to $1,000 breakthrough. Then it took out the price of gold. Went over $1,200. And that's when I decided, yes, I need to get back into this. So I was an investor first in cryptocurrencies. And my wife invested in cryptos and I invested in cryptos and we didn't know about each other. And one day she just showed me the amount of money she made. She invested X amount of money in XVG and this thing went up thousands of percent. And the money she made out of a literally small investment was like a six-figure income, which surprised me. I just couldn't believe it. So I started looking into this year by in 2017, beginning of that. Now, just to go back a little bit further, and I know there's a few people that will probably hear this interview, and they're going to hit me over the knuckles and on the head, but I'm going to come clean with this, you know.
Business...
My business before I got into Bitcoin, I work in the oil and gas industry. I've got a master's in occupational health and safety with a medical and engineering background. And I've been working in the oil and gas industry for Shell, BP, Woodside, Santos, Arrow Energy, a lot of oil and gas companies for 20 years. So a lot of the work that I do is data related. Anyway, so I've got this algorithm that I developed for the oil and gas industry to accumulate data, to read problematic data and come back with quantitative analysis. You know, quantitative, for example, is where somebody in the health and safety industry says, I don't feel good this morning, so I can't work. Okay, how do we quantify that? Because you can't put a number to a feeling. So what it is, I developed a system that can actually quantify a feeling and then quantify that into a quantifiable quantitative analysis and put a figure to it. And with that figure from 1 to 10, we can say good or bad, more or less. And so that is where my work started with that. And then the same data program I then developed into a political campaign. And this is something that I just really want to tread lightly because I don't want to bring political information into cryptocurrencies. So just understand me correct, but I just want to say where my work came from. So and I'll probably exclude certain names. So in America with the latest election, and if I say exclude names, people can probably figure it out. There's only one election in America. I was involved in a certain election process providing certain campaigns with data. And the same as Cliff High, and I only met Cliff High the beginning of 2018. We developed crawlers, and these are probably the same web crawlers that Cliff High is using. Now, this is not unique stuff. It's not that we developed it. You can actually go and download the old Yahoo crawlers that they used in the 1980s and 1990s, take that, import it in C++, configure it or rewrite the script, and you've got a crawler. So it's very easy to do for anybody who can do a little bit of coding. So that crawler goes around. It goes into servers and all over the world in the internet, and it brings back data. So I duplicated that crawler into 7 different crawlers. And what it does, it brings information from 7 different parts in the world. It's the same with Google, for example, and many people don't know this. But Google will be able to predict right now with all their data they have that who will win the next presidential election in America. It's a fact. They can do it. And we can do that too. So we provided political data to campaigns before we got into Bitcoin. When Bitcoin came around, I realized, but listen, I can use my data to go and fetch. We call it fetch. And if we say fetch, it's F-E-C-H, just a code for fetch without the T, data from around the world. And you give it a code and you say anything with regard to Bitcoin, bring that back to us. The same what Google does. And then it brings it back into a server. We analyze the data. And from that data, now, for example, okay, one of the easy points to identify if Bitcoin is positive is if you look on Twitter and you see people are really positive now, they're starting to say Bitcoin is going up. 2 weeks ago, people were negative, and they said the market is going to go down. So you can look at the negativity without even looking at Twitter. You can pull all the data. You can assemble the data, put a quantitative problematic future analysis to that, and you can see that the market sentiment is negative. And then you would say to yourself, okay, the market sentiment is negative for the entire world, so I'm not going to buy Bitcoin. But now the market is changing. The sentiment now is positive, so it shows now that you can think about starting to enter the market. So this is how web bots like Cliff High, how his linguistics are working. And he's very smart, Cliff High, with what he's doing. And without knowing about what he is doing or did do, we did almost similar to what he was doing. Now, I'm not saying that our system is more greater than his. I think he's far advanced. But anyway, so we use this data that we gather, which is a technical methodological analysis of data and an advanced algorithm, artificial intelligence, basically, that brings the data back. And that constitutes about 42% of our analysis for Bitcoin. Now, you've still got about 58% that you still need to go and work with, because once you get the data won't tell you the whole story. So what we do, we've developed conventional behavior standards. And those standards are anything, like I said, for example, where we take a feel good when somebody says they feel good. And on Twitter or any social media, they can say like, oh, I feel good about Bitcoin now. If you can quantify that and put it in a quantifiable quantitative number, then you can work with it. And obviously, we take into account market conditions, the market cap, obviously, the capability of the stock. Sentiment then is also a big factor for us. And we get all that information out of social media reporting. And then we've just now introduced operational manipulation. And I say operational because this is induced, forced, actionable manipulation. Not by chance. It's people that do it deliberate. So we combine all that together. And that's how we come out with our information. So it's just a disclosure that I did come from political campaigns. And I see there's a lot of people on Twitter that are eating me up. And, you know, of course, at that time, I wanted to hide my identity. And this is probably one of your questions in the beginning, where I said, you can remember how violent, and I want to mention the word violent, how violent the political campaigns were in America. And at that point, you didn't want to associate your own name with anybody else. But at the moment now, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, I had a what do you call it, an alias name. So I used the alias name. But now I don't matter. You know, I did work for both Hillary and Trump campaign, providing them both data. But as I said, I don't want to get into the political aspects, you know. But now we use the knowledge that we've gained to work out the predictive analysis for Bitcoin. And I tell you what, it's not an easy job. A lot of people think they look at a report, they read the report in 2 minutes or 30 seconds rather, but they don't realize that we have spent hours and hours and hours reworking data, trying to figure out where the market is going to go to provide that report. And, you know, 70% we are correct, 30% we are wrong. So we're not 100% correct. And the reason is for the deliberate manipulation of the market by these elites. Sorry, I'm just ranting on there.
You mentioned your history and how you got to this point. You kind of went over that, and that's very useful. So along with your history in, you know, working with data, I guess you could say big data, and getting hooks into it to measure with, you know, based on sentiment and opinion. I mean, that all makes sense to me. Along with that, though, you must have had a background in trading, in technical analysis, to actually pull it all together into the reports that you're doing. So,
Now remember, technical analysis only forms about less than 9% at the moment of our analysis. Now, I wouldn't call myself an expert trading analysis, you know, with regard to working with Elliott Wave and all these kind of parameters, but I have been investing myself in gold, silver, stock markets for the last 20 years. And I basically taught myself over the last 20 years. I went to numerous seminars, did a lot of courses, but I'm not a financial advisor. I'm not an expert technical analyst with regard to Elliott Wave. And one of the reasons is when I looked at my data, the algorithm data that I have, whenever I apply Elliott Wave on my algorithm data, it doesn't work. And you'll notice that if you go through my tweets, about 3 months ago, I made a statement on Twitter and I made a tweet and I said that trading analysts that are using Elliott Wave are going to scratch their heads because what is coming next will not work. And this is exactly what you see now. You see that people that are using Elliott Wave or any technical indicator are scratching their heads. They're saying, but listen, this is not working. It's not working. What is wrong here? Because the problem with Elliott Wave is where do you put your first point, your number one line? Okay, we start from here. We go up one up and then down and then one up, and then it falls flat and you have a third wave that comes down below the first point. So the problem is, where do you put your first point? If you put your first point at the wrong position, you're wrong for the rest of the chart. So, my knowledge basically with trading with technical indicators like Elliott Wave came, you know, it's like an old thing. I've been on TradingView for 10 years. I understand a lot of things like Guppy, you know, using of Guppy and a whole bunch of other stuff and technical indicators. But, you know, it gets very complicated when you start using all these indicators. And sometimes, and this is what I see on Twitter as well and all over the place, that people are using all sorts of technical indicators. Whereas if they remove all those technical indicators and just have a look at the basic facts, you'll realize the market is going to go up or the market is going to go down just by looking at maps and maybe one or two technical indicators. You also have to remember applications such as market sentiment. These things are more important, in my opinion, than, for example, Elliott Wave structures. If you combine that with a simple indicator like volume, for example, that will give you a much better indication also. So you don't need to be an expert in all these Elliott Wave theories. And one of the other things that I just quickly want to mention here, let's say we look at volume, for example, and this is why I say the technical indicators sometimes are completely wrong and they just don't work. in Bitcoin specifically, not in other stuff. You know, you can apply Elliott Wave, for example, to gold, and you'll see it works perfectly. You can apply to, let's say, for example, Facebook now. It applies really well. But if you look at Bitcoin, for example, okay, what happened in the last 2 days is that Bitcoin price went up. I was looking at it, and I actually made a recording over 12 hours. I saw the price of Bitcoin going up exactly as we predicted. It goes up and up and up and up, and I look at the volume, and there's no volume. I go further into the volume to the exchanges, and I see there's hardly any volume, but the price is going up. So as the price goes up, 2 hours later, people start buying, and they get into the market, and the price moves further. Now think about this for a second. Go to any stock on the Dow Jones. Let's take Apple, for example. With Apple, it works like this. The volume comes in, and the price moves up. The volume comes in again, the price moves up. But with Bitcoin, the price moves up first, and then the volume comes. That is manipulation. So it works a little bit different. And this is why Elliott Wave theory and all these technical indicators sometimes don't work properly.
People I know who are very successfully trading, really they're looking at the stochastics, the traditional one, RSI, the Fib numbers, the Fibonacci numbers, increments, really kind of the old school basic stuff. I've really been enjoying reading. Recently, I've gotten into reading really old books on technical analysis. Like I'm reading one now called Trading with the Pitchfork, Time-Tested Strategies. And it was written back in the 50s. And I like reading this really old stuff because it was harder. You know, you had to do a lot more with a slide rule. You know, and it wasn't easy because all these indicators didn't really exist, and it was a lot of trouble. It was a lot harder. So they did things in a much more simple manner, and they seem to do better. For instance, if you look at astrology, I mean, in the early 1600s and such like that, astrologers like Nostradamus and such, I mean, they were right on. They were amazing. And they basically had a great ephemeris that told them where the planets were and such. And most people didn't know what time they were born. I mean, they had a lot less to go on. They just put more weight on very, very simple things. And they were better astrologers than astrologers today who have computers. And I'm finding that for me, I'm getting better at TA by just reading old books by people like from in the 50s and such who their methods were so simple and they worked. They really weren't distracted. So I like what you're saying. I shouldn't give Elliott Wave a hard time, but I find that, I don't know, it ain't made me money yet. So anyhow.
Yeah, it's difficult to ascertain where the market is going to go with Elliott Wave. And that's why you just need to use combinations of different factors. But in essence, you know, we don't want to call ourselves trading or technical analysts. We call ourselves trend forecasters. And we've just been approached by the world's number one trend forecaster to provide them with data. So our data is really, really great. And we are probably going to take the deal and provide that specific company or person with the data. And you probably know who I'm talking about. So you have to take into account a little bit more with Bitcoin, more the factors of the world, what's happening worldwide, you know. And especially, you know, if let's just get into this, for example, and this is why I said my thinking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are not probably what the normal guy is thinking. We have got evidence in our algorithm data. Now, we imported the blockchain, we pulled it to pieces, we wanted to see how it was developed, who designed it, what happened. When was it started? Everything, you know. So we had about 19 questions that we dropped down, and we said, okay, right, let's start. When was it developed? Now, the initial phases, think about this now. Although I can't remember the exact date when Bitcoin was released. Can you remember?
I do not know.
I think it was released here around about 2008, just at the crash. But nonetheless, we have got evidence that the blockchain, that they started developing the blockchain, which is Bitcoin, that we understand Bitcoin today, the first time that anybody worked on it was 2004. Okay? Now, if they released it then in 2008 or 2007, somewhere there, We can argumentatively say that they worked 3.5 years on Bitcoin. Now, I'm saying they. So I'm saying they. A lot of people think Satoshi Nakamoto developed Bitcoin. No, it's not true. Satoshi Nakamoto never existed, and he doesn't exist. A lot of people like to believe in this little hero story that Satoshi Nakamoto developed it, but it's developed by a group of people, and we're getting very close to identifying. We've got three of the people now identified, and we're just trying to find out who is part of that group and how they did it. So if you look back in 2004, okay, they started with a coding that was only used by Microsoft. Microsoft has got the patent on the code that they started with, and it's still in the blockchain as per se, in some of the coding. Now, if you go and study that specific coding, there's a patent, and Microsoft used it in their own operating systems. Who gave them authority to use that? And for these, for the technical guys out there, the coding guys, go and research what I'm saying, and you're going to find what I tell you. And we are soon going to release some more data on this and get the world, you know, to go and research. But anyway, in our opinion, looking at some other data as well, okay, think about this. They released the Bitcoin blockchain, and up till they released it, up till today, there's no flaws in it. Everything is working just fine. Okay, it's not an extremely complex design, but it's a very well thought out design. But you would have thought that they should have fixed some bugs and a whole bunch of issues. Now, there has been a few changes made collaboratively, but that's to modify it to the better. But there were no issues with it. So that tells me that they had 3.5 years to iron out all the faults and all the mistakes and then release it to the world. So I believe really that cryptocurrencies was released to the world to get rid of fiat and introduce cryptocurrencies to the world. And I think they just misjudged them with the adoption of the population. And now the population want it. And they're trying to hold it back because it's growing too fast. There can be various reasons. Everybody has got their own reason for that. But the point that I want to make is that Satoshi Nakamoto, one guy, did not sit behind a desk and develop blockchain. You just need to talk to Charlie Lee. And I met Charlie Lee when he was here in Australia at the Sydney conference. And when he tells you how difficult it was for him to develop Litecoin at that time, because it was very complex, now it's really duplicate like they've done with Tron, you know? You duplicate the blockchain and you start your own cryptocurrency. But at that time when Charlie Lee was doing it, it was extremely complex. And this is now years, 6, 7, 8 years ago. So it was a complex process for one person to bring the blockchain about.
It does seem a little bit fairy tale-ish that one person wrote and created the entire thing and is kind of an enigma and doesn't actually exist. Like, you don't really know who he is. He's kind of like Marius Landvin. Maybe Marius is not just one person. Maybe he doesn't exist. I don't know. Well, something that you were mentioning about taking the blockchain apart, here's a question I would ask. What is blockchain? Because, I mean, right now, you know, crypto is, and the blockchain is in the public mind. And people are questioning, hey, you know, what is that? And to me, when somebody asks me, what is the blockchain? What is blockchain? I just say it's a public or a private ledger. When it comes down to it, that's what a blockchain is.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The blockchain is simple. It's a very simple process. It's a digital ledger. And then transactions are made in either Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies and held on that ledger. Now, the ledger is what we see as the front face, and it looks like really easy to understand. But behind that ledger is huge encryption and very well thought out processes to handle different aspects of financial transactions in different circumstances, in different problematic situations. So think about this now. All those different variables of the financial transactions, how could one person figure out that complex interaction with banks and financial institutions and transactions in general all over the world. It's just not possible. But on the front face, you are correct. It's a digital ledger in which transactions are made. And then it keeps the records there forever, and you can't alter those records. And then the encryption on the front face is this way, so you can't alter it. That encryption is something that is, it's unbelievable. You know, when I go into it and understand a little bit of coding, and for those coders that are out there, they'll probably agree with me, it's something that the world has never, ever seen. It's security so strong that John McAfee can't even understand that. So it's above everybody's pay grade. Who designed these things? And it's not been designed just in 3 months or 6 months. It's been designed over a period of time with the help, most probably, of very, very well-known technical analysts or coding analysts that work for Microsoft.
It makes sense. I mean, anybody who has a background in development, who's done coding, any formal development process, would know for, let's say, Bitcoin to be released to the public, and it just suddenly exists, and it has performed as well as it has. If one person actually wrote it and then put it out there, it was just, you know, one-shot deal, I wrote this and I put it out there, then that would be beta. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily be production code. It would be, well, let's see how it works. But it seems to me, at least through my knowledge of Bitcoin, it's always worked. There's been some improvements, but it seems like if it was one individual, you know, wrote it in their man cave, then it would probably have to be 70% rewritten before it worked. That just would be the normal development process to me. So it seems like it would have had to have gone through a really large formal development process to actually work on its first release.
Yeah, you're exactly correct, because there should be certain protocols of internode communication. And those internode communications, you have to figure that out before you actually design the software or the whatever you want to call it, the protocols anyway. But those internode communication cannot be figured out by one person. You know, it just doesn't add up. But nonetheless, you know, we still believe that regardless of who designed Bitcoin or for what reason they did it, there's still a lot of people that can make a lot of money here. And this is one of the reasons I'm in it. You know, I wanted to become debt-free. I'm debt-free now. Now I'm making profit. And I want to help other people become debt-free, and we've got the opportunity to do it. Yeah.
I like that. Something that you said in a tweet was, you predict your own future, and what you speak out will transform in reality. You know, so hang in there. Don't read all the stupid fake news. I never read it. You're definitely putting out positive vibes. I mean, do you believe that literally, like, what we see, like what we envision with passion is what's going to happen? I mean, are we helping to create a better future?
Yes, we are. Definitely. And let me tell you how I grew up. I was born in South Africa, and I grew up in an orphanage for my entire life in South Africa. While I was in this orphanage, I always looked at other people that are with me crying because their father was killed, or their parents were killed in an accident, or that their parents divorced, or whatever reason it is. And they cried, and they mesmerized themselves, and they basically told themselves that I will become nothing in the world, and, you know, all these kind of stuff where people get depressed about their own situation and blaming other people for their own situations. And from a young age, I realized that I must not do that, because otherwise I'm going to be depressed. And I was always a happy boy, happy-go-lucky, although I grew up in an orphanage in South Africa, in a little town called Dispatch. And so they can track me back. My name is Marius Landman. I grew up in an orphanage in a place called Dispatch, in an orphanage which is the in Afrikaans you call it the Oosterland Kinderhuis, which is called the Easterland Orphanage. Okay, so there you go. There's my real name. So I suddenly realized at that time, as I turned into 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, that, listen, wait a second. If I am going to be the opposite of these people, of my fellow friends in the orphanage, I need to think positive things. And I started doing that for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a year. And I suddenly realized that everything that I put my mind to is coming true. I visualized myself that somebody will come to the orphanage and ask who they can adopt. And I got adopted by very great people that had a farm on the East Cape of South Africa. And they then immigrated to New Zealand. And that's where I went with them. And I went and worked in America and then came back to Australia, basically met my wife in Houston, Texas as well. But to make a long story short, okay, what I realized over the term of my life, if you want to know where you will be in 5 years from now, listen to what you say to yourself. If you constantly tell yourself that I can't get out of debt, I can't get this car paid off, I'm going to be in an accident in this next week, that is going to happen to you. The opposite is this. If you constantly tell yourself when you wake up in the morning, I'm going to have a successful day. Man, I'm getting out of debt. I see deals coming to me. I see money coming to me. I see my wealth increasing. I see my personality increasing. People look at me as I'm larger than life. You know, then it's going to happen. I have sometimes done that when I literally wake up in the morning and I say to myself, I've got this big business deal. I am now visualizing myself as a 10-foot giant. I'm large. I'm big. And, you know, one day I actually did that. I went to a meeting, and one of the guys who was taller than me looked at me and he said, yeah, you look so tall. And I suddenly realized the power of visualization. This guy was taller than me. But he looked at me and said, yes, you are tall. And I tell you now, if you want to know where you're going to be in the next 5 years, or 3 years, or 2 years, say positive things. Speak it out what you want. Put it on your fridge. Put an image there. Look at it every day. I guarantee you it's going to happen.
Oh, that is 100% accurate. It reminds me of a tweet that you put out. You said, Anthony Robinson once said, there is a powerful driving force inside every human being that, once unleashed, can make any vision, dream, or desire a reality. And it sounds like you connect it to that, and you're putting it out there. So, you know, I definitely encourage people to follow you on Twitter and follow your work, because it's not just about cryptos. It's about a lot more. And I definitely would love for you to put out, and I hope you do, you should put out a positive affirmation morning meditation and give that to the world, because you are good at it. I guess when you're connected to your signal, life just miraculously works, and it can be tricky to be okay with that.
I love it, you know, because you have to think about it. I get goosebumps if I think about it. Now, I believe that there's a creator, and let's call him a creator. He's the creator of this universe. It must be, because only something or somehow this universe was created. Now, if we think about this, now, if we say that the creator of the universe, let's just call him God for now. Now, I'm not saying the Bible is correct or any other books or stuff is correct. I'm just saying let's go with what I'm saying here now. The Bible says that in the beginning, God, he's the creator of the universe, whoever he is, we don't know. It's an entity or few people. Nobody knows. He created the universe by saying, he spoke it out, and he said, let there be. And he spoke it out over a couple of days. But the words of that entity, the creator of the universe, was so powerful. Scientists are telling us now that every second, there's new universes being created. Not just one, but new universes. So it's unlimited in a 60 hours or 60 minutes, how many universes are being created. This means that the word of that God, the creator of the universe, was so powerful that it never, ever stopped creating. And our lives that we live on earth is nothing different. If you wake up in the morning and you say to yourself that I am going to have a good day and specify what you want, it will carry on and on and on, and it will bring the goodness to you. Your words never stop. That's why you need to protect yourself and never ever say one ugly or negative word. You know, this is very, very important, to stay positive. And the woo-woo thing, basically, I really believe in that, you know, that there is a creator of the universe. The universe has given you protection through, the Bible talks about angels, but it could be in different formats. We don't know because I haven't seen it. I don't know. But I believe there's a power, a force, an energy force that protects you. All you need to do is to climb on board that protection and ride the wave. And that is why on Twitter I ride the surfboard. The surfboard is that power. I'm on that power and I'm riding that wave. So, and there's a lot more to it. You know, we can go into details about it, you know, psychics and all that kind of stuff, you know. I really believe there's a room for that as well. And even if you, whatever religion you are, don't discount these things. There are people that are really intuitive and they're spiritually minded. And for all the guys out there as well, women are more spiritually minded than men in general. But get in touch with your inner self and explore these ideas. You know, once I started doing it, my whole life changed. And my life is now exciting. And things are happening. It's not a dull life anymore. It's been like that for the last 15 years.
Your word is just as powerful as the word that created the universe. In fact, it's the same. That's just my take
exactly.
on it.
No, I 100% agree with you. Because in essence, you design your own life. You speak out what will happen in your life. And your words is so powerful. Now,
Keep
me right. I don't want to bring a religion or anything into this, you know.
It's fine.
Because people get agitated with politics and religion, and I'm trying to leave that out of cryptos. But at some point, we have to agree that there's some magical power.
Oh, no. See, when you mention the magical power, I think it's good because that's something I noticed, you know, following your Twitter, following your work, that it's not just about crypto. You know, it's about living an extremely positive life. And through your life experience that now we know more about, you kind of speak it with authority. I mean, you grew up in an orphanage and then via positive intention, you got yourself out of it. You started creating your life from there. So it's always good when a person can say that, positive thinking is real, you know? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to say that, visualization and positive thinking and your God and your word is powerful and your word creates. I mean, it's easy when somebody who says that, whose life's always been easy, but when someone's life absolutely was not, that's when, to me, it holds a lot more weight. And something about being protective. When you're connected to your signal, I call it your signal, like whatever your soul's volition is, like, and it changes throughout your life. It morphs. It's one thing, then it's another. But there's always a connection to your source, your signal, your soul, whatever person wants to call it. And when you're connected to that, you know it. And when you are, you have a certain aspect of protection, and things just happen to work for you. And it's like I said, it becomes challenging to trust and deal with all the abundance. We had Laura Bombier on the show, a great visual storyteller, and she talks about how some of her incredible travels around the world that were treacherous at times, she just knew that she was connected to her signal. She was doing her soul's passion, and she was always okay. And part of that, she expected to be okay. In the movie Men Who Stare at Goats, it's called Optimum Trajectory. I believe the line exactly goes like this. Have you heard of optimum trajectory before? Your life is like a river. If you're aiming for a goal that isn't your destiny, you'll always be swimming against the current. Find out what your destiny is, and the river will carry you. Events sometimes in life will give an individual clues as to where their destiny lies.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Where can people get a hold of you, and what are you offering these days?
Well, people can simply go to my website, mariuslandman.com, or find me on Twitter, which is landm_marius. And then what I'm offering for people today is you've probably got a very good amount of followers and people that follow your work. And my offer today is for those people, if you are really under pressure with money and you really haven't got the money to pay a small subscription that we have, which is only $24, for the first 10 or 20 people, it doesn't matter how many, contact me. We'll give you a free subscription. So I hope that will benefit your clients. But it's only for those people who really can't afford it. We really want to help you. Contact me and we will put you into a free subscription plan at least for 6 months. Because what's coming next in Bitcoin? You need to get involved. I want you, even if you spend $500 and buy some Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, we can help you and get you started. And we'll do it free of charge, only for your subscribers, mate.
That sounds absolutely perfect, and I will get that out there. Well, thanks for being on the show today. It's been great. It's been inspirational.